Good evening. The Board of Education will now come to order. Mr. Ellis, will you lead us in the pledge?
Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Board member Steve Vondrak is not able to attend the meeting in person due to employment-related obligations. In accordance with District 41 policy, Mr. Vondrak notified the superintendent's office on November 21st that he would not be physically present for the board meeting, but would like to participate in the meeting by phone. May I have a motion to approve Mr. Vondrak's participation by phone in tonight's meeting?
Motion. Second.
Roll call, please.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Welcome, Steve. If I can just remind board members, too, the mics are pretty touchy, you know, so if we have paper around them or whatever, I know being on phone calls, you hear a lot of that, so if we can pay attention to that, that would be great. And speak up from the end of the tables as well. Any members of the public present who wish to address the board this evening? And welcome to you. Okay, thank you very much. Presentations, reports, and initiative updates.
Well, we have a very special presentation this evening, and I'd like to welcome Dr. Clayton Graham, who has been working with the district on creating benchmark study to help us better understand how we perform as a district, both financially and academically, and how we compare to other benchmark districts that we've identified with him. Before we get going, I'd like to mention that Dr. Graham is an adjunct professor at DePaul University and has been doing some incredible work as it relates to statistics and their analysis, including doing statistical analysis for professional baseball teams such as the Boston Red Sox.
Yankees, Red Sox, Mariners.
And Dr. Graham has been working with school districts to help us also get a finer eye, a finer tune to some of the data that helps us determine how we are. Now, we met with Dr. Graham earlier this year, the cabinet team, as well as two board members, Dan Smith and Steve Vondrak, to help identify those districts that we thought would be good comparable districts for us, those districts that we felt either had characteristics like ours or districts we may wish to aspire to. And so that the result of this study is taking those benchmark districts, looking at our ISAT data in an indexed form, and Dr. Graham will explain all that. And so we are very, very pleased to have you here with us this evening and helping us better understand who we are and how we can get better.
Thank you, Anne. Okay. Let's back up a step or two. Where did all this benchmarking stuff start? I've lived in Barrington ever since 1976. That's more than a week ago. And one of my good friends challenged the school district to find out how they were doing. And this was District 220 in Barrington. And one of the first things that came about is that how are we doing academically? And are we getting value for a tax dollar? Two not unreasonable considerations. And the fellow that undertook this project was named George Schubert. He is now chairman and president of the Ray Books Foundation. He's also been a Fortune 500 CFO for several companies. So he's a very competent type of fellow. And George called me and said, Clay, I want you to take a look at some of this information. And I said, George, I don't have the time. And as George would do and realize imperfections in my personality, he would send the information over and say, can you open this file? And he knew I opened the file, I'd take a look at it. And I did and said, this is a bunch of crap. You know, so we went over and stuff like that. So we built a very interesting profile of the Barrington School District, one of the more complex school districts. And one of the people that was on the board for the auditing was Max McGee. Some of you may have heard of Max, who's the former superintendent of schools. And the first time I met Max was I was showing some of this data, and Max said, gee, if I had this, I'd still have my job. He was fired by George Ryan because the school districts in the state didn't improve enough. And if anyone thinks that the state superintendent can improve the schools, is a mongoloid idiot. Improving schools comes from this level, not from the state. Okay, let's go on. Now, there's no question there's more scrutiny about school districts now than ever before. On the right-hand side, you see a copy of the Tribune from a couple weeks ago, and scrutiny in schools and scores and everything else like that. I think all of us have seen that. With our yardstick, measurement is the most important thing that is going on. Unless you measure what you're doing, it doesn't get done. But now, are you effectively competing academically? How many of you think you're competing academically really good? Don't all raise your hand at once. I would, because I think you're doing a pretty damn good job. Mm-hmm. Secondly, financially sound and control. There's more issue on finances than there are on academic performance these days. Finance is one of the most important things that's going on right now. Are you paying your bills? Have the ability to pay your bills? Right, Bob? Anything that to do with that? Finance is so important. And if you don't have a district with a proper CFO, you're in deep, deep doo-doo. Is everyone getting value for the tax dollar? Anybody know that answer? Anybody know that answer? I'm going to tell you that answer. I'm going to tell you right now. You're doing good. And meeting expectations. What are expectations? How do you quantify expectations? Okay. You got to know what needs to be measured, where you're going, who you are, and what's happening. What needs to be addressed? Clearly, academics, finance, value, and expectations. Anybody have any objection to those four criteria? Now, you may recognize this guy. This is Billy Benchmark. He's a fifth grader at your Benchmark school. And he's helping us out in this project considerably. What does benchmarking deliver? Prioritize one of the most important things that's going on. What is the most important thing to address? Where aren't you performing? The gaps. How well do you compare to others? That's why benchmarking is important, because you want to take a look at what is the competition. Anyone have a problem with that word competition? Because we're all in competition. Best practices, ownership of ideas, and go beyond the traditional means of measurement. This is a process. Measurement, prioritize, best practices, implement, and all starts all over again. It's a never-ending loop. Has anyone ever been dissatisfied with what is going on in Glen Allen 41? Is there anyone here who's been satisfied? Good. So everyone is not going to be satisfied no matter what you do. That's good. Now, this is what benchmarking delivers. We're going to talk about data. Without proper data, you can't do anything. Does everyone agree with that? Mm-hmm. Unless you have proper information, it ain't going to happen. Academic performance, fiscal integrity, and value. Data viability. Not what it seems. This is taken from a couple years ago from the Chicago Sun-Times. that shows all these districts were meeting and exceeding their expectations. How many of you are educators? One of the primary purposes of a test is to differentiate students. Is this correct or incorrect? You want to know how one student's doing compared to another, and how can you put them in order who's doing better or worse. This is the very basis of what you do in education. This is what the state does. You have a zillion districts that all measure the same thing. How does that differentiate? It doesn't. Now let's take a look where the numbers come from the state. There are raw scores that all the students take. And from the raw scores, they are mapped. Let me emphasize, they are mapped. The scale scores eventually work their way to the report card, with the innocuous meet and exceed criteria. Okay? So when you're looking at the meet and exceed, it's two levels of aberration that have gone through. If you take a look at the mapping criteria, it's not always the same. This is 2006. It shows third grade rating 120 to 137, 120 to 155. If the examinations are consistent, wouldn't you expect that to be consistent? Of course. Of course. And it's not. The situation happened back in the, and this is from 2006-07, that shows the, and this was for District 54, Schaumburg. Anybody here of Schaumburg? Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, Ed Rafferty was superintendent of the year. Mm-hmm. But more important, one of the biggest school districts in the world, and to change them is Herculean, to say the least. And here they show the reading, math, science scores, and the like. And you see 82, 89, and 90 for the meet and exceed. And so you said, look at this and say, science is doing the best, and all of them are doing pretty good. Is that an unreasonable assumption?
No.
Now, if you take a look, where do they rank? Where do they rank? Reading 79th percentile, math 85, and science, who they said 90.5 math, were only in the 50th percentile. Is that concerning anyone? Well, it concerned me. It also concerned Ed Rafferty and his team at District 54. You carry it through. This is from 2011, the most recent statistics. Here we have third grade math, 44% of the students that took the test were in the C. Eighth grade reading, 10%. How can you possibly compare these things? What the state gives you, in a technical term, really sucks. You cannot make any type of quantitative decision about what is going on. And here's an example of third grade math, the seventh grade, where you take a look at the shape of the distributions. And as those familiar with education, one would expect that when you take examinations, you would expect a normal shape curve. Symmetrical, equal amounts in the tails and the right. That's not what's happening in Illinois. Why not? Anybody have any ideas? Why is this so distant from the realities of what is going on in Illinois? It's inconsistent, incompatible, misleading, and quantitatively useless. I hate being modest in my definitions of terms. You want to make things that are comparable by subject, grades, and 20 years. Wouldn't you like to know how your third grade reading is doing between this year and next year? That's not an unreasonable request. Would you like to have your cohort numbers be comparable for 1 year to the next year? Of course. Before we know where we want to go, we must have knowledge of where we are. Now, we're creating an index of the scale scores, but that's all the state gives us. Where the state average of any in particular one is 100. Very simple. It's 100. When we went to select the benchmark districts, which is one of the most important things we're doing here, we talked about academics, the size of the district, the demographics, geographic proximity, those districts right around you, and we're given another criteria. We want to be compared to the top 10 districts in the state. Very vigorous statement. And feeder districts to Glen Bard 87. Those were the criteria for selecting the benchmark district.
So, Mr. Graham, just to clarify, that's the criteria that you got from our representative.
From you guys.
Got it. Just wanted to make sure I knew that.
Didn't make it up. Didn't make it up.
Okay.
Does demographics include economic?
Yes.
It does.
It includes economic. It also includes educational attainment of the parents. These were the, I must say, in spite of my training, did not have more than 5 bullet points per slide or in a bio like that here. And these were all the districts that you guys selected to be compared with for all the different reasons. The biggest group of comparisons I've ever done in my life. I was apprehensive, scared, and figured I didn't have enough computer space to do it all. But that was not a problem. Let's go forward. If we take a look at the districts, the third grade reading, here we are. And keep in mind, the top 10 are the top 10 in the state. So you're comparing yourself with the best that there is. And you can see you're slightly below the benchmark districts in that situation. And I'm also going to be comparing things with respect to the state. We're going to look at the benchmark districts and the state. Let me point this out. 13% is what proportion of the districts are out better than you. So it says that the third grade rating, you're in the top 13% of all the districts in the state. Is that good? How many think that's good? How many think that's bad? How many don't have a clue?
We don't
know what we're doing. Yeah, no one has a clue because you don't know what that means.
Right, right.
That's why we're here today, to give some clues. Okay. Let's take a look at fourth grade reading. We're going to look at reading, math, and science.
So is that red bar the average of the benchmark?
The red bar is the average of the benchmark.
Of all,
yes.
All those districts.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for pointing that out. And here we can see when that one is slightly below the mean of the benchmarks in reading, fourth grade. In the state, you move from the 13% to the 7.4%. Is there something that's good to move from 13% to 7%? I think it's Herculean. Okay. Fifth grade reading. You're up above the benchmark average. And keep in mind, the competition is very elite. Very strong. And likewise, you're in the top 5% of the state. What happened? 13%, 7%, 5%. You're improving from third grade to fourth grade to fifth grade in reading. How many people think that's good? Come on, raise your hand. That's really darn good. Darn right that's good. Sixth grade reading. A little below the mean of the benchmarks, but since you're competing with such a high level, you're in the top 8% in the state. This is grade reading. Seventh grade reading, this is a problem. You kind of fell off the board. In the state, you're in the top 15. That ain't the top 5. So this tells you in reading, in seventh grade, there's a problem. Or more appropriately, there's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Eighth grade reading, back to about the benchmark, maybe the top 9%. Is there any reason that Glen Allen shouldn't be in the top 10% of every single grade?
No.
That's where you make it happen. Mm-hmm. But you know where to go to work on it. Mm-hmm. Now, let's go to math. Third grade math, about in the middle, and you're in the top 10%. Fourth grade math, you're right. Now, keep in mind, the middle, when you're dealing with the top 10 districts, is not so bad. That's pretty darn good. In the top 6%. So let's take a look. Top 10% in math in third, top 6% in fourth. Is that good or bad? Of course, it's great. Fifth math, above the benchmark average, in the top 6% of the state. Seventh, right around the benchmark, in the top 7%. Eighth, but you're below the benchmark. But even though you're below the benchmark, you're in the top 4.5% of the state. So the benchmark districts you're comparing yourself with are very, very strong in math. And even though you're below the average, you're at 4.5% of the state. Would this seem like a reasonable goal for everything you do to be in the top 5% of the state? Why don't I put words in your mouth? If you've been doing 8th grade math, why can't you do it everywhere else? And shooting bets.
No, I'm not. I mean,
no,
you
know, no, we've had this conversation before, so we know where it went. Science. A little below the average, top 60%. Ain't so hot compared to the standards of everything else that's going on. Seventh grade science. Around the mean, but only 13%. Are we getting a message here? When you're below 10%, that's mediocrity for Glen Allen 41. Glen Allen 41 should be the top 5% of everything. Is that unreasonable?
No.
I don't think for your team it is. Overall, reading. A little below the mean, in the top 8%. Pretty good. Mathematics overall, top 5%. You guys are doing great in math. Doing great in math. What are the smiles here? Are you guys math teachers? I'm a math guy, too. I've never had a differential equation that didn't bother. Okay. In science, 13%. You really have work to do in science. So we've taken a look at each subject by grade. Now we're looking at by subject. Now look at each grade individually. 11% in the state. Okay? That's what you're coming in with. Fourth grade, around the mean, you went from 11 to 9. That's a good trend from, keep in mind, this is for 2011 data. We're going to show you some other stuff in a moment. Fifth grade overall, moving up. have 5% of fifth grades. So you've gone from third, fourth, fifth. Isn't that great? You're improving the longer you stay in Glen Ellyn. Let's say it again. The longer you stay in Glen Ellyn, the better you do. To me, that's a very important comment. Six percent. Still about the same as fifth. Seven. Falling below the mean of the benchmarks. You're in the top 10%, but it's not as good as the other guys. You think there might be some work to be done in seventh grade? I think so. Overall in eighth grade, top 5%. Very impressive. Overall, comparing everything, you're the top 6% of the districts in the state. You're 42nd in the districts in the state of Illinois. That's pretty damn good. But not good enough. Let me take a look. Let me show you some things. The data that I do, which takes all the scores, I take all 3 million scores from the state of Illinois and average them out and things of this sort, much of the contrast to the state IBE.
Can I ask you a question about that previous chart, the aggregate?
Yeah.
Did I hear you say we're 42nd in the state?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Huh? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So there are certainly other school districts that fall in this, they just weren't benchmarked.
That's correct.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
The bar charts are the benchmark districts. The bell curve is all state. The whole state.
So we're comparing the districts, thank you, Ann, from the state to the benchmark districts. And I think your goal is not only with the benchmark districts, it's with the state. I don't think there's any question about that. Overall, you're in the top 6%. And I think a short-term goal would be to be in the top 5%. That requires work in certain areas, which is somewhat focused. Now, this is from 2010 to 2011. How'd you do, boys? How'd you do? And here we see reading went up. The state meet and exceed criteria shows you went down. All these little arrows are what the state showed you did. And the only reason I show it is because the state is so glaringly wrong in the direction they give the school districts. I go back to the one thing with District 54 and showing what happened with science. They reallocated $2 million worth of their budget from reading to science because they saw the numbers here that were drastically changed what they were doing. And I'm really thrilled this year to say that every single school in their district is having 2 improvement in science. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to focus on what needs to be done, and the state gives you the wrong information. The state gives you the wrong information. That's why I'm here. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a little quick spark graph and showing what happens in the different districts by sub, the different grades by subject and where they're going. And you can see a 6-year trend. The previous chart was 1 year, from 2010 to 2011. This is a 6-year trend. And you can see some pretty interesting information. Now, let's take a look at each school. The index, you see stoplights here, would show how does that particular school compare to the average of the schools within the district. And then you take a look at the trend in the spark graph. Where is it going? Where is it going? And you take a look at, overall, Hadley is falling down a little bit. But the thing concerns me when I see it, I guess 0.1, that's an annual rate of decrease. An annual rate of decrease. How many people want an annual rate of decrease? Nobody. You want it to improve. So this shows something is not going right there. something is going very right there. Here it's going down and here it's going up. So he can see which schools. About the document you're going to get tonight will also show every single school in the district by grade, by subject, of where they're going. So you'll be able to see details of what's going on. Also, every benchmark district school is there to compare them to other districts that you're benchmarking against. And also, you're going to have every single district in the state. There's more, and the reason I didn't pass that out is you guys would be looking at that all day, you'd never even hear me, which has a reasonable advantage in itself. Okay. People are going to say, the numbers you showed me aren't the same as I see in the paper. The trivia. So it's in six counties, only look at meet and exceed. How many people want to use meet and exceed for their criteria? Anybody raise your hand, they will shout. Schools only, not districts. Very few, there's no numbers that come out that show districts. Sometimes, statewide, reading and math scores only. Not all grades are included in schools. Chicago Magazine, Chicago area, they do it by counties. Uses meet and exceed in schools only. So when people come back and say, why aren't we higher? They're not measuring the same thing. They're not measuring the same thing. Fiscal integrity.
Can I ask you a question before you go on the fiscal? I missed the beginning, so I apologize if you already stated it. But the difference in this graph from, you know, being from a benchmark of, you know, 100 to 115 or whatever.
Okay. Huh? What page is that? Yeah.
It doesn't matter anyway. You know, you've got the difference here. Let's say you're at 100.
Right.
And then 115, that index.
Okay. Let's take a look. What does 100 mean? 100 means that's the state average for all the districts in the state for sixth grade.
Okay, that's an index that you've used.
That's an index I created.
To get us to a base of 100. Right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's
and then, so that 15-point difference, whatever it is in the index, is that measurable in terms of what does that mean?
Oh, yeah. It means if it's 15, it means you're 15% higher than the state average. I'm also going to give you...
Then the state average or the benchmark average?
State.
So this is not the state average. I mean, this is not the benchmark average, and this is
no,
state
that's
average.
The state average. That 100 is the state average. Mm-hmm.
I just some thought around how do you interpret what the 15% means, and really what you're saying is it means if you scored a, you know, a 60 on. Test, you could assume it's 15%.
I'm giving you a whole set of workbooks that shows every score from every district, and you can compare them completely in a workbook. Okay, so you'll be able to see where it stands within the whole thing. That is something I'm giving to Ann. She'll have the only copy of all that type of stuff, but I'm giving you the workbook on everything.
I get that. It's just, you know, if you're, let's say you're over here to the right, and you want to understand, to get up here, what do I get out of that? And what you're saying is, if I'm understanding this, is I could get whatever the delta is between where I am to this 115, I could get that percentage increase in my ISAT results.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Is there any way that you get above the average? Let's hope so. Mm-hmm. Let's hope so. Is there any way that I consider my own 41 average? I don't.
And then the data you use here, you may have said again in the beginning, I apologize, but the did you say you were just taking 100 students consistently through the district, or are these
all students?
All students. So you're not really, sort of the problem with the ISAT is you're not able to track it back to say the same group of kids versus the next group of kids.
I can take the group and get cohorts,
right?
But by this, which I have not done here, which I have done in the past. No, that can be done. That's not.
And is that, and where I'm going is we always struggle with, if I have, you know, if I have 100 kids this year, I have, next year I may have 80 of the same,
yeah,
but then 20
of the that can be done. You have to remember, I have a limited amount of time. I want to give them that thing.
Sure.
I'm giving you all the data about all the scores, all 3 million scores.
But does your experience suggest because we struggle with this from a data perspective. We struggle with we're not measuring the exact same group of kids. Does your data suggest that there's not enough noise in the data that it doesn't matter?
If you go from third grade to fourth grade, who's going to have experiences?
Even though the kids are, the population's different.
Even though the population's different, it is not significantly different.
Not significant to worry about it, stress over.
And I just want to make a clarifying statement. Mm-hmm. I do believe this red line is the benchmark district average.
Right.
100 is the average of the state.
Okay. So the red line is benchmark, and then 100 is the state.
Correct.
There you go.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Fiscal integrity. Where does your money come from? Anybody care where your money comes from?
Sure.
Everybody cares where the money comes from.
Okay. If you take a look here, you know, there's not much difference between the major districts here in terms of coming from property taxes. No surprise. No surprise. Now, where do you spend it? Instructional costs are the major portion of expenditures, and you spend the highest proportion of instructional costs. If you go down here to where is right here, okay. There is very little difference. There is no statistically significant difference about what you spend for instructional as compared to the other districts in the benchmark and group. Okay? You're spending just as much as everyone else.
What's the federal? I didn't understand the federal line.
That's what the federal government gives to you. Okay, federal, it depends on which district you're in, the proportion of money that comes from expenditures.
I guess I see instructional as a cost, but I guess federal and local,
Let me go on to the next one. You might clarify the expenditure control. Let me just get down to, because that doesn't look right. This is the revenue source. Let me double check that, because that didn't look right with kind of what's spending so much in federal. Let me redo that one for you, because I agree with you. That doesn't make sense. Let me go and double check. Revenue per student. 1 of the lowest. You don't get a lot of revenue per student compared to the other districts. You're getting about, 14,000 per student, something of that nature?
What does that mean, revenue per student?
The expenditure. It's really expenditure per student.
Is it revenue or is it
no. Revenue is all the taxes and money that comes in that you get divided by the student population.
So that's just tax divided by the tax revenue divided by the number of kids.
Right. And if we take a look at that's where now let's take a look at expenditures, which is total expenditures per student, which is the same thing for what you spend in a life. And since you're very, very close to the break-even point, you know that $250 is pretty close. Your revenues are pretty close to the same as the expenditures per student.
That doesn't make sense to me though, because we have a lot of expenses that are not necessarily student-related, but the numbers are
It doesn't matter whether they're student-related or not. It's just a number.
Oh, okay.
And keep in mind, this is from the 2010 information that we have. We don't have the 2011, but this is an available thing, which shows that the overall situation is you have a surplus, which is good, about $250 per student based on the 2010 data, of revenues and expenditures. Okay? That's pretty close to break even. In general, you want to accumulate funds rather than be in a break even point. Is that a true statement, Bob?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. From a financial standpoint, you want to accumulate wealth and reserves because you don't know what's happening. And at 250 ahead, that's pretty, that's good that you're on the positive side, but it ain't enough. It ain't enough. Now, debt service. You're among the lowest of debt service of the benchmark districts. you're paying about 6% of your revenues in debt service. That's good. That's good. But also keep in mind, debt service in recent years has been very, very low because interest rates have been low. Does anyone want to guarantee interest rates are going to be low for the next 3 years? Is there anyone that wants to guarantee that interest rates will go up over the next 3 years? I guarantee interest rates will go up over the next 3 years because of the deficit spending of the U.S., the euro, and everything else like that. Ain't no way it's staying the same.
What's that? Ain't no way.
Value. This, I think, is one of the more interesting charts that we've done, which shows how much you spend and the ISET index that we derive. Keep in mind, the ISET index is a very neutral type of number. 100 is the state average for the whole state. And so this is 2011, which shows that you are, keep in mind, this benchmark district is very elite. This is not any type of sheepish type of thing you're compared with. And here you are, right at the benchmark average of these elite districts. But look where you are in terms of your cost. Your expenditure per pupil are what? 12.5 per pupil? And here you are in this elite upper quarter of what's going on. This is value. What you spend and what you get. What you spend and what you get. You get 106 and you're spending among the lowest amounts of any of the benchmark users. This is a very impressive and very comparable type of chart. Now, one thing I did is I took the demographics of your district in terms of educational attainment of the population, mobility, and a whole bunch of other things. We said, what should I expect from this district given those things? And you're in the top 10%. So you have a high value of exceeding expectations from the demographics you're giving. Are you doing a good job with the people you're giving? Yeah, you're in the top 10% based on what you're given. That's pretty impressive. That's pretty impressive. So you have strong financials, you're exceeding expectations. How many people can say they have strong financials and exceeding expectations? Ain't the U.S. government, that's for sure. But you guys are doing it. And here, we'll talk about English proficiency. And here, you have a very high proportion of students that English is the second language. And how many students are doing better than you with that high proportion? There are two districts in the state that are doing better than you. There are two districts in the state that are doing better. That's remarkable.
How do you get that two districts doing better out of this?
Okay, if you take a look, here is where you are. Okay? And here's a district that has a higher proportion than you do, and here's another district. There is no district above you other than these two. So what should you do? Pick up the phone and talk to these people and find out what they're doing. And maybe I'll speak to her about next year.
So the theory is it should be harder the more percentage students you have, I think is what you're...
Yeah, there's a negative correlation. The higher proportion of English as the second language, the worse you do. And here you are at 106 with, 11.5% limited English proficiency, and only two districts in the state with that higher proportion that are doing better than you as a district. That's pretty impressive. The demographics of Glen Ellyn 41 are changing. And this tells me you're doing a pretty good job of adapting. Pretty darn good job of adapting. And looking at the other districts that feed into Linebart 87. You can see how low income varies considerably over that group. Limited English proficiency, but here you are, and you're beating some of the similar districts that are here. Mobility, not as high as the other, and educational attainment. Educational attainment is the most significant factor determining the ability of a student to do well. The higher the education of the parents, the more motivation there is for the student. Okay. This shows what has happened over the past, since 2006. These are the scores from the ISET average that you have done. And this red line shows your state ranking. The ranking is reversed. You want to go up in that regard. And you see that 2009, you went up, and I was told that your curriculum changed considerably in 2009. Is that correct?
Between 2007 and 2009.
So okay, fine. So the curriculum changed during that period, and it takes a while to go up. That is very typical of every district I've seen that changes their curriculum. Okay? And so you went up and doing well. And the reason you see these different variations here with respect to your state ranking is a tribute to the incompetency of the state measurement. But I wouldn't want to make a definitive statement that they're inept.
So that red line is your index or the state telling you?
This is your state ranking. This is your state ranking based on the state index. Or the state index equals 100 each year. So you're fairly consistent. You range between 55 and 38. That's a pretty tight range. It doesn't mean you can't do better. I'd like to point out a couple other school districts. That's okay. There are two districts that have really blown my mind. One is Schoenberg 54. 2006, they were 250th. You know what they were in 2011? Any idea? 75.
13.
65th. Remarkable. And there's a continual pattern. There's also a bump when they change the curriculum. Another is Kildare. Kildare started around 60th. Okay? Not too far from 42, is it? You know what Kildare is today? 8. We're providing information to both those districts. It isn't because I provided the information. What we did is provide an area where they should focus. That's why it's so nerdy for you guys to take a look at this stuff, because it tells you where to go. It tells you where to go. It's not the answer, but it'll give you a path. Let's take a look. Number one, I cannot emphasize the nerve it takes to undertake a project of this nature. I have to give Ann and her team credit for saying, we want to know. I remember sitting back a couple months ago, and she looked at one chart and said, we've got to have it. You know, which is really a very nervy thing, because what I showed her was not good. It was not good. You ranked 42nd in the state. Pretty good. Pretty good. I really believe that you can be the top 15. I really believe that. You have consistent performance. Over the years, that number has been fairly consistent. Exceed expectations. That's one thing you did really good. Based on your demographics, you are keeping more than the pace of what's going on. Your revenue expectations lead the benchmark districts. You have lower than revenue and lower expenditures than the other districts within the benchmark group. You have a positive surplus, but it's not enough. I'm a financial guy. Between the 50s is okay, but I'd rather see between 1,000 and 1,500 per head.
I think Bob would too. Can I put the word hang up on? What he said or not.
Longer in the Glen Island district with that little blip at 7th grade, the better you do. That's very impressive. The longer in the district, look what happened in 8th grade versus 3rd grade. It's wonderful. You get extraordinary, you're in the upper quarter, extraordinary value for your tax dollar. But people say, what are you giving me? We're giving you results. Glen Island 41 is giving results.
When you talk about the 250 surplus per pupil, getting that up to 1,000 to 1,500, why do I need that surplus? What is that?
Fiscal integrity. I run a business. You don't want to be that close to breaking even.
How does that translate into value, though, based on your equation? In other words, I now have to, let's say we get to the 1,500 per pupil surplus.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have fiscal integrity, I think is what you said.
Wonderful.
What's the value?
The benefit of it is that you now have more money in your bank account. You can accommodate more variations that are going on. You have union contracts that are coming up and everything else of that nature. It gives you a certain amount of latitude to be able to make viable decisions. It gives you the latitude to make good decisions. If you don't have the money in the bank and a positive cash flow going forward, you cannot make your best decision.
So I think the value issue is more about cost per pupil and performance. And that's where the value for the money is, as opposed to the amount of surplus you have.
Yeah, and part of where we struggle with this conversation is, you know, our revenues, if you will. You're a finance guy, right? So the risk with our revenues are pretty low, right? I mean, they're tax-based, they're property tax-based. The stream itself, the risk of getting that stream is very, the risk of not getting
the revenue stream. Side is good, you know.
Right.
The expenditure side is uncertain. I remember a situation in Barrington where they thought everything was fine and dandy with the risk going forward. And all of a sudden, they had to tear down the school and build a new one, $4 million.
$4 million.
I'm not saying that's what's going to happen here, but the point is, you want to be able to accumulate cash flow rather than deplete it. I mean, this is not rocket science. You want to accumulate cash flow rather than deplete it. 250 is not a very high accumulation rate.
Is that an annual number, or is that a...
That's a number from...
Is an accumulated number.
No, that's from 2010. It's an annual number.
Oh, it's an annual number. Okay.
It's an annual number. And I think you really want to accumulate more than $250 per pupil per year. My judgment. Sixth to seventh grade, room for improvement. You can see that. Academic improvement. Science clearly requires emphasis. That's the lowest group that is going on that is not up to par with the rest of the district. And generate a strong surplus. I think those are the three things that I see going forward that you guys should focus upon. But I'm a snot-nosed kid from the North Shore. Not from the North Shore, but just from Northwest Suburbia. District 64, part of grid.
Well, Clayton, we appreciate your presentation and the data that you've given us. And I think one of the things that we are appreciative of is having this database that we can now do more work with and ask more questions and have more information that gets at some of the questions that we have even deeper than this. I mean, we were very interested in knowing how we were performing against our demographic changes, and we were pleased with that result, but also see, as you said, we have a room to grow, and I think we're prepared to take on that challenge.
No. The thing is, the very fact that you called in to talk about it, I give you all the kudos in the world, because there are a lot of districts that talked to me on day one are terrified, and several superintendents have talked to their compatriots, and they're terrified to see this information. Mm-hmm. And I'm neutral. I don't care. I just want you to have the information so you guys can make the best decision. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up in the northwest suburban area. I want the public school system to succeed as much as anybody in the world. Believe me. Believe me. And I had a wonderful experience in it, and I know you guys are giving wonderful experiences to the kids in your courses here, too, and you can make it even better. And that's what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity. I'm really excited about where you guys are going and what you can do.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you. Thanks for the workbooks.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget those workbooks.
Though I've been waiting for them.
Yeah. Plus the folders are all here for the board and the team that's selected it. And again, thank you so very much for talk to you guys.
Thank you, Clayton.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Excellent work. Steve, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. 1 second. Make sure we didn't lose you. Thank you very much, Dr. Graham. Appreciate it. All right. Under action items, our consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, which includes human resources, personnel report, employment recommendations, leaves of absence, and there is an addition to the preliminary personnel report that was originally distributed to the board, and that's in our blue sheet. Item 2, finance, facilities, and operations, the treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue expenditure summary report, summary of bills and payroll, school district payment order, vandalism damage report, disposal of surplus property, the 2011-2012 FOIA report, and item 3, other matters, including board meeting minutes of November 14th, 2011, regular meeting.
Where is this in our laptop? What would this be called?
It would be under your action item. If you click on that.
Right on the front page.
And then you scroll down, you'll see all of the items that are in there.
Mm-hmm.
Motion.
May I have a second? That would be your second motion. And a second. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mr. Bondurant?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Right, superintendent's recommendations. First one, school improvement plans. School improvement plans. Each year we accept the school improvement plans. This year we must take action on Churchill's school improvement plan and submit it to the state. The reason we are doing this is based in the No Child Left Behind law, which states when a school does not make adequate yearly progress in any subgroup for 2 years, the school is categorized as being in school improvement status and the plan must be approved by the state. May I have a motion to approve Churchill's school improvement plan and accept all District 41 school improvement plans?
Motion.
May I have a second?
Second.
Discussion.
Is there a brief one-minute summary or something that could be given on at least the Churchill one?
Oh, Gene, Scott just left. yes, I think we can, they've focused. All of our school improvement plans have to be focused by the state's requirement on literacy and math. So you have to have a goal in each of those. And thank you. And so Churchill has focused their goal in terms of some smart achievement, and each grade level has what they need to attain. They focused on their second language learners and the subgroups that have not made it. That's another piece that the state requires for that plan, is that why didn't you make AYP, and then you have to have your plan specifically aligned to that particular group of students. So that is a little bit different than the other plans, where they may look at a more generic, you know, we're doing this at the grade level for all students, and then here's what we do for students who can, here's what we do for students who can't. The Churchill plan must be specific to the subgroups that did not make AYP.
Any other comments? I just want to say that as I was scrolling through the school improvement plans, I think I probably said this last year, but each time we get the improvement plans in the first year is our tree ring binders, and they've gotten both deeper and more robust in terms of the language and how specific they've gotten, which I think in some ways is exactly what Dr. Graham was talking to us about, and that is the more data that we have, the more specific we can be about our school improvement plans and the work that certainly the BLT does around that as well. So just an incredible amount of information in those, and certainly a lot of work that goes into building them. Anything else? Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Fenwick?
Yes.
Mr. Bondra?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes. All right, item two, the 2012 Hadley Parking Lot and Stormwater Project. The administration recommends that the Board of Education approve it's going to go out for bid for the Hadley Parking Lot Reconstruction Option 5A with underground stormwater detention and alternate C1. Estimated cost associated with Option 5A is $893,000 and alternate C1 is $175,000. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented? May I motion? Motion. A second, please.
I will second to proceed with the discussion.
Thank you. Discussion.
Okay. One of the things I wanted to mention to you is after we did some further investigation about a dual bid process, we felt that the expenses associated with that didn't warrant two bids, and we also were uncomfortable with having to go out with two bids and then not having a recommendation, which is very typical of what we would do, bring you a single recommendation. We think we provided you some data that would validate from other sources that this recommendation meets the criteria that we set out, both from the Master Facilities Site Committees as well as other feedback that we've received from citizens and parents throughout the years. The other thing that I wanted to mention, because a board member indicated to me earlier that we may have somehow communicated that a perception that we were guaranteeing that by bringing this particular project forward at this time, we would guarantee cost savings and by being able to do joint bidding and that sort of thing with the village. I don't think we ever said we would guarantee cost savings. We felt that this was an opportunity that we would have as a result of doing it at the same time as the village was going to do their road construction, that if there were opportunities to be had for joint bidding, efficiencies of product, that we would have a better chance of obviously getting them now than we would if we went out to bid or if we did this project at a later time. We still believe that to be true. Our bidding processes do not align with one another. The village won't be bidding until after the new year for this project, which is way too late for us. And so what our hope is that we continue to have conversations with them about ways in which we might either consolidate efforts or align efforts so that will give us greater efficiencies. And one of the engineers from the village suggested that even the delivery of materials might somehow offer us some efficiencies later, but we won't know that until we actually move the project forward.
Yeah, from my perspective, I never assumed anyone ever said that you would guarantee savings. Mm-hmm. I think at the beginning we thought that there might be an opportunity to save money mm-hmm. because we were doing the village, but I don't ever recall anyone ever saying it was a guaranteed savings.
Good, good. And we still hope there may be some savings that we'll garner from this, but we won't know until the project.
I don't see how unless the village timeline is a little different than ours right now. I don't see how unless you actually submit.
We can't do a joint bid.
Right.
No.
So at that point, the only way I think you could say it would be whoever they pick, you give them a shot at it and see if they think there are savings of doing the work because they're already doing other work.
Or the encouragement that once we get our bids back and the village does their bidding, that they same vendors apply in that bid process.
Right, which that's the wild card.
It's a wild card, no question.
I guess I said this in the last meeting. I still struggle in terms of a priority, given the work that is involved with a project like this, the time associated with it, versus some of the other things we're doing around 21st century learning, course common standards, just the list of items. I know this was moved up.
It was just moved to a different place because we had this opportunity. If we weren't bringing you this project, we would be bringing you a roofing project or another parking lot project.
So I still struggle with the priority of this, given all the things we may be doing next year. We're trying to deal with affordables, the 21st century learning, the Common Core. I still struggle with this priority. I like the idea of the Glencoe piece of this, because it seems like the idea there is that the buses are off the road, it's safer to get the kids off.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the alternate that would be considered in the bid.
And I know we're only going out to bid, but I look back to the team here again and say, you guys have time to do. At this point, we're not saying, yes, we're going to move forward with the project, we're going for bids.
Mm-hmm.
We can still not move forward with the project once we get the bids.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the time commitment of this versus all the other priorities that, I threw this out last time, no one said anything, mm-hmm. so I may be the only one on that.
Well, I went back and listened to our last meeting because I wanted to get a sense of where we were all having, pro or con on this. And I did listen back to what you said, John, and you're right. You said tonight what you said at the previous meeting. And it came to from another board member to me, again, a question around the, is it how do we plan for capital expenditures? And so I thought about what you were saying, John, and these different priorities. And, from both a long-range plan standpoint, which we have in place and we're all supporting, as well as the short-term reality of needing to manage our assets, and I consider certainly this part of our capital asset in terms of the work being done there, that, and I've asked Bob this, you wouldn't bring a project to us unless it had been identified as and earmarked as critical. So if it's not this year, it's next year. You've told us unequivocally that the parking lot has got to be taken care of, and that a part of this is also the stormwater issue. But to your point, John, in terms of other priorities, our budget and the budget that Ann and Bob presented to us do outline where those other priorities are and how we would assign dollars to those. So I'm not looking at this as we're robbing Peter to pay Paul in order to do something versus another, that there's a strategy in place to make sure that we're doing things as they need to be done and trying to get the best possible, dollar amount. And you've done this for us before, Bob, in terms of, and we saw this just in terms of our last budget reconciliation, that coming in under budget on projects and that type of thing, that it's smart to be going out, as you said, Ann, versus what the village is doing, which is to wait after the first of the year to get on these projects ahead of time and get people lined up. So,
and get your best prices.
And get your best prices, right. And we've seen that advantage the district in the past. So I also feel the weight, like you do, John, of multiple priorities. And I think that's in part the richness of our long-range plan and what we want to do. I'm not concerned that there aren't dollars earmarked to be able to move forward on those. And as you said, this is to go out for bid. We may in some ways be surprised what comes back. And I'll, personally would be interested to see that.
Yeah. Just so we're clear, I get it. This has to get done. I'm not suggesting Bob's bringing a project to the board that doesn't have to get done. But my priorities was in two different buckets. One was around all the other things we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And two was, I know, for example, we were thinking we might do 21st century in, two classrooms, let's call it, making it up. But, with this kind of expense, maybe there's a second priority bucket, and maybe we should put that, you know, these dollars into that as a more of a priority for capital expenditure. That's where I struggle.
Yeah, is that? I mean, that's. I think that I hear a question in that, and that is, are we taking dollars away from a key priority, which is 21st century learning, by doing something like, by going out to bid on a project like this? Are we taking dollars out of a project like that in order to do this?
Oh, you're asking me that question. I thought it was rhetorical at first.
Well, it was at first, and now I'm really actually asking it. Why are we, you know, are we doing
well,
this?
Well, we hadn't put accelerating the 21st century mm-hmm. classroom on our capital project timeline yet. We have had conversations about accelerating that project for next year. Mm-hmm. And so we wouldn't see the two. We'd be looking at other budget dollars to say, mm-hmm. do we want to allocate some of those other budget dollars mm-hmm. to accelerating the 21st century classroom?
Mm-hmm. Now, we haven't had the budget discussion yet, but I think we all got the spreadsheet that said we got a $3-4 million years of capital expenditure yeah. that we've never before. We've always had $1-1.5 million.
Right.
So whether we want to admit it now or not, we've got sort of a capital expenditure decision and priority mm-hmm. to make, and that's where I go back to, is this one a priority vis-a-vis the 21st century, which could make those $3-4 million a year buckets grow if we decide to accelerate mm-hmm. that, right? So those, we still haven't rationalized that. Does that make sense to what I'm saying, you guys?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How much do you want to spend on new classrooms, John? Remodeling classrooms?
Well, I don't know, Steve. If the administration were to come back and say, we budgeted the ability to spend on 4 classrooms, 1 in each building, I might say, let's get there faster and let's try to do more, you know, depending on what the cost is. I don't know. I don't have that data.
But we have a real number here for the parking lot bids. I mean, and you're saying there's other priorities. How much do you want to spend instead on remodeling classrooms?
I don't know if it's a direct correlation, Steve. I think it's more of a prioritization. Do the parking lot versus 2 or 3 roofs or whatever.
You got to put dollars to it. You're saying it's a priority.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're saying spend money on something instead of something else.
We're always going to have those questions. And that's why I think in John's comment, and it's you picked up on that too, Sam, is this question of are we diminishing an effort to move forward 21st century by having to do something? Let's face it, parking lots are not sexy. They're concrete and they're have-tos. They're not nice-to-haves. If you have a hole in your roof, you call and you have it re-roofed. So this is not a...
In the next 3 years, we'll have to address the Hadley parking lot.
Right.
So if we don't do it this year, we will do it next year or the year after that. So it's not a...
And how much did we spend in dollars on... How many classrooms did we set up for 21st century classrooms?
We set up 8 classrooms, and we spent $65,000.
Okay, so we could do another 8 classrooms for $65,000. And what is the outlay for the... parking lot expenditure that we're budgeting?
Well, about $1 million.
Yeah.
It just, John, you want to do $1 million worth of rooms? I'm trying to talk, when you talk about priorities, these numbers are way, the magnitude is much different.
Yeah, I don't look at that 60, because we haven't had the discussion yet. I don't know what all the numbers are, but I don't look at that 65,000 as a benchmark. I think we talked about, or at least I brought up the idea of the concept of taking, you know, 4 classrooms in a building and making them 21st century, like not just adding pieces of furniture here and a smart board here, but literally tearing down the walls and building it the way we thought it would look to see and experiment with it.
But I think I just want to separate apples and oranges here.
Yeah.
That's a very different
Absolutely.
Project and a very different pool of money that we would be using, and we are not far enough along in that process, nor are we in a position where we're talking about adding portables because we're tearing down walls in order to make 21st century classrooms. So I just want to keep your conversation focused on this project. I would, you know, we have withheld projects in the past that have ended up costing us a couple hundred thousand extra because we held off for another year or two. Franklin is an example of that. The work we did at Lincoln about 4 years ago cost us several hundred thousand more because we waited to do that. So we're going to do, we have to do this parking lot at some point.
Yeah.
And
again, I'm not, you know.
And we'll continue on because that is part of our long-range planning financially to create 21st century classrooms. So as we look to finance our future, we're looking at those things and balancing
right.
those things as
right.
well.
Right.
All I'm saying is, from this board member's perspective, mm-hmm. I don't know that this is a priority given the 3 years of $4 million buckets we have. I'm alerting you guys to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also making sure the administration has the bandwidth to handle this. And
mm-hmm.
if they say they do, we can go out to bid.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want anyone surprised downstream
mm-hmm.
if when we start to rationalize these projects over the course of the next years, you know, I don't feel that this is a priority enough for me to support. Maybe you guys do, and that's
mm-hmm.
great. There's
mm-hmm.
no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of how many more classrooms do I want to make 21st century, at what cost? We don't have the numbers
right.
to have that discussion.
Right.
The question itself doesn't make sense.
What do you mean the question doesn't make sense? You're saying I don't want to spend $1 million on a parking lot. I'd rather spend it on classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. I don't know what that gets me, though, because we haven't done the analysis.
Yeah.
Yet.
I think to Ann's point in terms of focusing, the decision tonight is do we send the administration out to go to bid on this project, and that's really the vote that we need to take, albeit with a caveat of what you're saying, John, and I appreciate that. It's fine. So if there's no further discussion, we'll go ahead and do roll call.
No, if there is.
I'm asking down here.
Mm-hmm.
I would only just comment before my vote. I could do it either way. It doesn't really matter.
I'm going to do that.
I'll do it now. I would tend to agree with John's comments and Erica's comments as well. I also struggle with the cost of this project. I understand that it has to be done at some point. I struggle with the prioritization. I just keep thinking of the entire school full of kids that we have in portable classrooms, and I just try to balance that out. For me, it just doesn't work at this point in time. I agree 2-3 whatever years down the road, it has to be done. It's something that is going to fail at some point, and it has to be fixed. I do understand that. Having said that, I do agree with Erica in that I think we do need to bid the project to see if it really is going to be this much money. I'm sure it probably is very close to what Bob says, but I would like to know what's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to vote to go out to bid, but it will be a very hesitant vote. But I'll just put it that way.
Okay. Anything else?
I think based on that, I mean, that's why I'd still like to see the other option go out to bid, or if we don't want to spend that, then just do the option without the water retention, the underground water retention. You know, looking at that, I just don't see, you know, the $350,000 delta with the bank for your bucket. You know, I'd rather see that money spent on adding another capital project. We had some last year. That came back with high bids, and we ended up not doing them, but those repairs still need to be done. I'd prefer to see us, you know, go without the underground and then use that money to accomplish more with the same amount of dollars. And just in my mind, I don't see the bang for the buck on it.
Drew?
I don't think it hurts to get out, to go out to bid, kind of figure out where we're at. And if it's more expensive and doesn't make sense, then we shouldn't do it. You know, if there's an economic reasons that doesn't make sense, yeah, okay, maybe we should go forward. But we're not going to know that until we have bids in front of us. So I'm in favor of moving forward on that.
Mm-hmm. Carrie, any comment?
Sorry, I'm walking in the midst of this conversation. I think we need to go out to bid. We need to have a better handle on it. I'm not opposed to the project. I understand John's position about prioritizing. From my perspective, this is a little bit of apples and oranges. This is a capital project. That's a different bucket, John, to use your word. And we do have a responsibility to our buildings. And to me, this is the way that I look at it. I would rather have us do this project sooner rather than later. If there's anything that we can capture by doing it now, I think we should use it as an opportunity. But again, we won't know that until we go out to bid. So, I mean, I support going out to bid.
Yeah.
I mean, based on what I'm hearing, I'm hearing a lot of, let's go out, it's expensive, you know, then maybe we'll rethink it. So wouldn't that behoove us then to go out to bid with both options so that at least we have an option that says, hey, the one underground or whatever is too expensive, we still need to get it done. Here is an option that is more cost effective. Because I guess what I'm hearing is if we go out and we don't do it, we're going to be back at this again next year.
Well, John, Dan, I'll be honest with you. I think that's a waste of our money to do that. While I normally would say maybe if it wasn't going to cost us so much money and the process of getting all these different bid documents and going through it, I might lean a little bit more to that. But either we're going to do it or we're not. And we're going to go out and do it the best way that we can because that's what we should do, not what's the cheapest way. With all due respect to the village board and the library, that's exactly what they did, and look at the mess that they're in. So I feel like we should, if we're going to do it, let's do it right the first time and not wait it out and figure it out as we go along. We're either going to do the project or we're not. This is the project that they've come forward with us. It's the smart way to do it. Everybody has told us it's the smartest way to do it. To save $40,000 or $50,000, we've spent it on the bid documents. So I think it's a waste of money to do it that way.
I don't understand what you mean. I guess for the Delta vaccine is $350,000. I think you're comparing apples and oranges. I'm not saying let's cut corners on this. I'm saying here's an option that accomplishes the resurfacing at a much lower cost, but lets us then take that money and use it on a different capital project.
Here's what I'd like to suggest, Dan. It's just from a standpoint of efficiency of business, it's easier to bring one recommendation to you, here are some things, what do you think about them? So this is the recommendation that we think is in the best interest of the district long term. We'd ask you to take action on that. If it fails, we would postpone this project, and perhaps the only way to bring it back then for success is the version that you're suggesting. We don't think it's the best suggestion long-term to have above-ground detention for any of our properties for a variety of reasons. And so I think this particular recommendation has to stand on its own merits, and if there's not support from it from the board for that project, then we would certainly have to go back to the drawing board. And you're right, we'd lose a year.
I guess it's going to cost around $57,000 just to do these bid documents on the second one as well.
Mm-hmm.
You have the additional $45,000 plus $15,000. Yeah.
Well, no, that was for the.
Well, there's $15,000 originally,
but
right?
It's still going out with the option 5 of the underground based on the typical cost that we incur. Mm-hmm. You're looking at around $57,000 cost.
Total.
Yeah. I mean, to go to bid with this option that we're getting ready to vote on.
Mm-hmm. Right, correct.
Any other comments?
One other comment. I had some computer problems.
We're back now.
The alternate C1, the engineering report says that, I think it says, regardless of the main parking lot project, the C1 option would eliminate some congestion problems, some commingling problems from the buses and the cars and the students.
Mm-hmm.
So my outlook on the C1 option is much better than the main option. Mm-hmm. But
the commingling of buses, but not the traffic issue. Just so, because we don't have parent traffic coming into the main parking lot. That the parent traffic comes through the kind of terminal. Yeah.
So I understand that doing one project and not the other is probably not, it may have its own set of issues, but be that as it may.
It's an option that you certainly could pursue if you choose to go out to bid and get both 5A and C1 as the alternate, you can say, mm-hmm. we're not interested in 5A, we're only interested in C1, and vote down the, you know, I mean, again, it becomes a series of recommendations.
Okay. I guess the last thing that I would say just in closing is that, you know, it was interesting to go to the Hadley meeting. I think Bob and his colleagues did a nice job of presenting. It was interesting to talk to a few people afterwards, representative of the village and a couple other parents who live in that area. And, you know, in talking to Bob about this one-on-one, too, I really wanted to understand what those intergovernmental partners are weighing in on. And that is why the district brought this recommendation forward, because in putting all that together, and I would add one other thing that we've not mentioned as a board, and that is the security and safety piece of this as well, which has been a long-standing conversation at the building. And so that's not without merit either, although I understand, as Dr. Graham said earlier, that finances are always the precipitating part of the conversation, and I get that. So let's go ahead and do roll call on going out to bid on the project.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
No.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Bondrak?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mrs.
Nelson? Yes. All right, thank you. Item 3, board policy revisions. Second reading and adoption. At its November 14th meeting, the board discussed the administration's recommendations to approve and adopt the policy and procedures revisions to Section 8, school board policies and or procedures, as well as policies 650, school wellness, and policy 7230, misconduct by students with disabilities. The administration recommends that the Board of Education approve and adopt the recommended revisions as presented. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Do these have the updates from the last one? Or just
We made the changes in them.
Yeah. Yeah, I went through and looked at the red line.
Nope.
That's the same.
Did we make, I just passed it.
Page 295.
296, 295. We did change the names, the assistant superintendent.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we can't do the generic on that because of the specific
function.
Specific functions.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different than
Yeah, and I remember, Dan, you brought that up as a question so that we wouldn't have to be changing that. But based on what it's about, they had to keep it. I didn't find anything else.
That was the only one.
Anything else? Any other comments?
Yes. As much as I'd like to take credit for the revisions in Section 8, I have to give it to Erica and Dan for all their hard work for the last
so year. Much. That's all. Thank you, Sam. Okay, roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Bondrak?
Yes.
Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes. Superintendent's report.
I have just a brief report as well as a comment to make about following through the remainder of this agenda. I spoke to several board members before our meeting just to express our excitement over the 21st century classrooms that were set up over the weekend, and the students had a chance to be in them today. And I want to give kudos to our buildings and grounds team and our custodians at our buildings who spent the whole weekend working to get those classrooms set up and ready to go. And one of our board members whose child is in the classroom said that child was so excited to get to school today. He had to get up excited, got up extra early, and was just couldn't wait to get there. We had one of our teachers send us pictures today, as well as reflections from the students and how they reacted to the classroom. But we're going to wait to share those till Karen does her update on the 21st century classrooms in the think tank at our next board meeting. So we are very excited, and we have indicated that we will have some kind of open house or something to kind of showcase them some point in the year.
Excellent.
So that's all I have to say, as well as I wanted to ask the board's permission to perhaps go into, take a break in our agenda, go into closed session for a matter as long as we have our attorney present with us and he's on a limited time schedule with us, and then perhaps return to closed return to open session to finish the board meeting, and then return to closed session to finish our closed session item. I know that's a little bit of a chaos, but given the time frame that we're here and limited, I'd make that request to the board.
Is that okay with everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So just for the for your information, those of you who wish to stay, what we'll do is go into closed session and we'll have a discussion. We'll come back, resume our agenda. I don't anticipate that we'll be in closed session maybe longer than 15 minutes, perhaps. So if you'd like to stay, the discussions that will follow will be the board report, discussion of the levy proposal, and I believe that's it.
Yep.
Okay?
Motion.
All right.
So we have a motion and a second?
Motion.
Yes.
Second.
We have to read. We have a reason to go.
You have to read all my closed session information.
You only have to read one.
Yes, the property C, right?
No.
B. Litigation. Okay. The board has determined it has a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the following matters. Litigation, when an action against, affecting on, or behalf of the particular district has been filed and is pending before a court or administrative tribunal, or when the district finds that an action is probable or imminent, in which case the basis for the finding shall be recorded and entered into the closed meeting. The board will possibly be taking action.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need that part.
So we're going into closed session for one item?
And then
yes.
We'll go back
and
in for
we'll
the other
come
item.
Back out.
Oh, so you're just doing one of the
right.
Okay. I was going to add the second one. Okay.
Okay.
Motion.
Motion.
Sorry.
Motion.
Second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Bondra?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Thank you. Resuming open session at 9:57 p.m.
And we're on to...
We are on to board reports. Are there any board members who wish to give a report at this time?
I have the delegate report that I will file in to
district court.
Seek leave to file. No, I will file this the results of the assembly are basically what they are. What we recommended. The votes were all what we recommended. There was very little discussion on some items, but it all worked out the way that we wanted them to work out. So I will file my summary with Maureen.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Other board reports?
At a finance committee meeting, and we went through the AP. It's been approved to move forward. And I guess there's a question, and we can pose it here. Does the board want to see it to go to policy, or directly to the next board meeting?
I think since it's been discussed at the full board, that we should just go right to the full board.
Okay, so we'll move it forward.
That's my opinion.
for the next meeting.
Excuse me. Sam, any opinion about that being a policy committee?
Well, the only opinion I have is it has been modified tonight.
If we could describe some of the modifications, maybe that would help.
That'd be fine.
Yep. And maybe board members would then feel comfortable having it just go to policy to be a part of the fourth
regular
board
policy
section
4, which we're working on.
Board members have a copy of the last edit that we gave and brought forward at our last board meeting. There was a suggestion to take some of the more specific language out and further discussion of the fund balance percentage. And so we took, if you'll look under number three, we removed almost all of the language there because it was too specific. We have agreed.
I'm sorry, just for purposes. The red now is changes to the last version or changes to the first version with new modifications?
Well, we left everything in from the first version. So all, okay. What you will see are deletions.
Correct.
And some minor adds. So, there,
so if there was an add, it would be in red still.
It's still in red, even though it may be the same. Some of them are just maintaining what we did. So I'll walk you through what each of the changes are. So we deleted much of the language of number three. All of it. We deleted all of three.
Three is completely, yeah.
Three is completely gone. On number five, we changed the language from 33% to 25%.
I thought we had talked about a range.
We did talk about a range, and the Finance Committee is making a recommendation to land on just a percentage. Mm-hmm. So that range was taken out of the next section, which says, states if fund balances are reduced below 25% of operating expenses. Bullet one, the range was taken out of there, and it was just 25%. If you go to the next page or the back side, the very bottom, it says if the fund balance exceeds 25% of operating funds, a plan will be made based on board approval. We removed for the excess reserves language. And those are the changes that the Finance Committee made and recommended.
We just housekeeping-wise, the four should be a three. And a
right. We'll change that when we do that. We remember we did those edits pretty quickly. So is the board comfortable then taking this to policy?
What does that mean?
That it would come forward when we bring section four forward.
Yeah. So we're working on that now.
We'll be bringing this forward as part of the revisions of that section.
And the other option was?
That you deal with it separately at the next board meeting and take action on an AP, which we don't typically do. We usually take it as part of the whole package.
Mm-hmm. What do you recommend?
If the board is in consensus that this is a direction you want to go, then I would say we begin operating under that consensus, and we take action when we bring Section 4 forward.
So it just becomes a part of our regular Section 4 update.
And I guess I have to absorb this. My initial reaction is, I think we all kind of gave, or some of us at least put ranges out there. This was definitely the higher end of my range. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if anybody else actually put a number out there, or if I'm the only one that did.
I did. I think it was.
And we had a range that we brought to Finance Committee today that was 25% to 30%.
Yeah, I think I said 15% to 25%. But
So you talked, to John's point about questions about it. This was brought to Finance. Finance agreed to this. The Finance Committee earlier, and Bob, I'm assuming since you're the numbers person working with this day-to-day, that 25% is amenable to you, that it works within what you shared as concerns about having, enough to pay operating expenses, et cetera.
That's correct. My preference is always going to be to have higher levels than maybe what are indicated here, but I think it's something we can certainly work with.
Okay.
And what that will do is if we set limits, and that will trigger some work on our part, November, December, or whenever that we can get those numbers finally developed, we'll need to start doing some homework in terms of what alternatives may be with regards to those fund balances.
Okay. And I would say if you're not comfortable, we just bring this back for board discussion.
Yeah.
I mean, my three initial things is I sort of don't like that we got rid of the balanced budget idea. I mean, I think we lost that idea. I thought that was a good idea. I'm still not convinced maintaining the highest financial rating matters.
It may never matter, John, but if we really needed to matter, we would like to have it.
Do what?
It may never matter. We may never utilize the tools required to have that rating, but we would always like to have it just in case we ever need it.
Yeah,
was my position.
And the number, so I would, if you have the votes, then go with the votes, but I would rather bring it back
Well, we aren't having votes on this at this point.
Right.
This is just a board report.
But when this comes back with Section 4, John, which will be in January, I believe. January? No. Whatever.
Good luck.
I'm almost done. Let's get it stamped. Then, you know, this would be a part of the natural review of Section 4. Right. So, return to policy?
Well, yeah, I guess I would just put, you know, we've been talking about this so long, maybe just put some time limit that if you can't return it within a certain amount of time, then bring it back as a separate thing.
Fine. I would like to see this completed. It's been on the books for more than 2 years. Okay.
Well, it seems like it'd be faster if we did it separately.
Okay.
Right.
You can bring it back separately.
To get it done.
If we do it separately, then we could put it on the next.
We'll put it on the next agenda. December 12th?
Next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
December 12th?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I would ask if...
As is.
Right, as is. So this is what's going to be presented. Concerns, questions, options, whatever it might be, please get those in advance of December 11th to Bob, to Ann, whomever, and then we'll have our discussion and we'll take a vote. Okay, other board reports?
Sure. Attended the foreign, what do we call this committee? Foreign language? Foreign study? Task force on foreign language. So we had a pros and delta session around some of the different models that we're looking at and some of the schools that we visited. And I think it comes down to really there are two models out there. One model is what we're calling more of a dual language program where you're teaching two languages, and it can be, so as an example, you would teach Spanish and English, and the goal of that program is by fifth, sixth grade, whatever grade, you achieve a proficiency in both those languages by that grade. Mm-hmm. And that proficiency is based on, you know, the grade that you're at. So what happens is you start at maybe 80% or 70% Spanish, and then you have a 20 or 30% English, and that's the way instruction starts in kindergarten. And then as you go up to fifth grade, those numbers tend to reverse themselves, mm-hmm. more on this other language than the first language. And then you reach a proficiency in those languages. And the second model that we haven't visited any like that yet, but we are tomorrow, is really more of a traditional foreign language program where it's a class. It happens, you know, 30 minutes, whatever, 40 minutes a day, 5 days a week, and you take a language, and that's more of the traditional foreign language approach. So we went through some pluses and minuses of those two programs. I think the best way is the first way in terms of the full immersion into the language. Seems to be, the research suggests, the best way of learning a language, but it doesn't mean that doing the foreign language program in Model 2 doesn't provide benefits and a way to learn a language as well. It's just there's kind of a best way and another way, I guess, would be a way to say it.
So Model 1 happens during the school day? It's just like targeted learning time would be...
Model 1, you come to class, and all the subjects and the teaching is done 80% in Spanish, 20% in English, or whatever that percentage is. Mm-hmm. And then when you go to first grade, it might go 75% Spanish, 25% English.
It's all day.
As you go up in grades, those percentages shift.
All subjects.
Well, you can staff that.
There's a staffing issue.
Mm-hmm. That's the model that I saw in Barrington, right, Karen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the entire faculty was bilingual?
Well, so the schools we've been to, with the exception of one, I think, they only had two sections of this per grade. And then I think it was Schaumburg had pretty much everybody in the school system, with the exception of the opposite, maybe one section per grade was not doing this, but every other section was doing
it. So you could opt in or opt out of the program?
Mm-hmm.
Typically, you opt in if you want in the program, but you need to opt in kindergarten And then if you decide to drop out, you drop out, but you can't, you know, you can't be in third grade and say, okay, I want to opt into this program now. They really want you to start from kindergarten on.
You have to. And usually it starts at kindergarten, and then you add a class, and you add a class, and you add a class.
But realistically for us, we're not going to restaff our entire district.
Well, because of how you implement it, it may, you know, through natural attrition and changes that you're able to staff a program. And you might do it in a particular school. One of the things that Barrington did was they rotate their schools. So one school started in a dual language, and then the next year another school starts a dual language program. And then so you have some natural abilities in that.
But, you know, in Barrington, what was two sections as well, or one section?
Two.
So, you know, if we have 8 or 16 first grade classes, right, they only were doing 2 of 16 at first grade. So it really wasn't for the whole school. It was for... And most of the programs, I think, that we saw, more people requested to be in the program than they had room for. So there is a lottery, and people don't get the program. And so that one of the things I brought up today that I was struggling with is, you know, I viewed foreign language as something for, you know, everyone in the school, not just for, you know, a particular demographic or piece of the school. So that's why we're going to see a more traditional foreign language program. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, I don't know if you had a chance to make a call yet or not, Karen, but I thought at Lake Forest they did Latin in kindergarten, first and second, and then they did foreign language in third, fourth, fifth, sixth.
Mm-hmm. I don't recall that at all. But
do you recall the Latin or not?
I remember, I do, but I don't, it struck me as a more traditional program where, you know, it was like every day.
You know, when we went to see the 5-8?
Yeah.
Well, it would have been in junior high then, not elementary.
No, I thought they did Latin early on, and then they started
I don't recall.
I don't remember when it started, John, but I do recall the Latin, and I do recall, if I remember, I thought it was a more what you could deem traditional program, with whatever their foreign language was that they used.
And I think... based on the group's feedback today, Spanish was probably the language that seemed the most a good place to start.
Mm-hmm. John, thank you for stepping up and being a part of the groups and attending and all that. I think it's really good insight. I mean, I'm glad I was able to attend the one just to have a picture of that, but your summary and feedback, I think it's really helpful for the board, so thanks for doing that. Other board reports.
At the communication goal. Erica and I had met a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. and did some more refining, put down some more notes, and so I have an interesting time. I'm going to pass around this to everyone and look for your feedback, because after the next step is to come up with specific actionable items that we could review. So I'll pass that around. And then also, kind of dovetailing into that, I attended a session at the IASB conference. It was entitled Protecting the Public's Voice. And this was another district, D41, but it was Lake Villa, which is a very active, similar in size. They have about 3,200 students in their district, just similar in size to us. And it kind of goes through what they had a strategy. They wanted to increase the communication, but it was more for the purpose of, they were also rewriting some of their overall goals. And so they had some interesting things. They did some focus groups, but they also had, they purchased a skirt and a table, and so they would set it up in uniforms, so members would go there with their logo on there and would just appear at some of these other public meetings. So take a look at that as well. See if there's anything else interesting in there that we might be able to borrow.
Thank you, Dan. Very quickly, I attended. So we want feedback. Email. Why don't we email Dan so he collects it all, if that's okay with you? And then he and I can meet to summarize this. And And the other set of notes from the 21st, we're happy to share. We didn't want to inundate you, but that's where we did a high-level breakdown of our cohort, our stakeholder groups, and whether we thought it was low, medium, or high levels of communication options, and that's where we came up with this November 9th meeting information. So thank you, Dan. Very quickly, attended Forest Glen PTA. I just want to get that on record here at Central Services. Very good meeting. Jenny Gygas, who is their social worker, did a presentation on PBIS for the parents. Very well attended, and also good questions around that as well. The other meeting was the November 17th CIT meeting, and of note, there was a guest there, Cinda Klinkna, who is the IEA president, who also was over at Hadley for a good part of the day and met with Ann and went to Lincoln and got a copy of Belden Boy, which is one of the books that was highlighted in our e-news from a teacher there. Also then came to our CIT meeting and was just very impressed because it was the CIT meeting where all the building leadership teams present what they've been working on. So it's very focused on data and the work that they're doing. And I'll just share, because this came up earlier with our school improvement plan for Churchill, that when Scott Klespitz presented for the BLT, their literacy goal is that by the end of second grade, 100% of the children will be at or above grade level. And he said that it's a lofty goal, but one that we want to set so that we can stay focused on what we're trying to accomplish. So very, very good report outs. And I'll do a written summary so that can be put into the minutes as well.
I also did attend the last few minutes of the PTA council meeting. So that was a foreign language meeting. So reported out on what we're doing in foreign language, and they had questions about the Hadley parking.
The Hadley what?
Parking. We're thinking of replacing. I thought so.
All right. Anything else? Great. Thank you very much. Discussion items, the 2011 levy. At its November 14, 2011 regular meeting, the board heard a presentation on the administration's recommendation for the 2011 levy. This is another opportunity for the board to discuss levy proposal and ask unanswered questions about the process prior to our December 12th public hearing.
This is an opportunity for the board to ask questions, raise ideas, concerns, issues that they may have about our levy proposal. This is we added this to the agenda this year because there was some discussion last year that people felt, some members of the board felt, they didn't have an ample opportunity to discuss the levy. We also, Bob and I, have heard from a couple of you that there are some concerns about the levy, and so we thought we'd preempt some of this conversation and offer you, if you want, that we can present to you some of the scenarios that if we didn't go with our recommendation, that here are some of the ramifications of not doing that. We, of course, don't want you to interpret in any way, shape, or form that we've changed our recommendation. We believe that we have the need and to levy as we've made the request to you at this point. But if there are concerns that you are experiencing and want to talk about, we want to at least give you some data. So Bob has prepared some spreadsheets, and if we could share those with you, then we might entertain some questions before we conclude this open session.
Okay. All
righty. Mike? Is that what this is doing for us?
No, that's
from finance meeting.
And please bear with me. These are things that just sort of came bubbling up today. And I spent the majority of the day but trying to not shut down my office completely in terms of the work that needed to get out.
Thank you, Bob.
These are just very general numbers. So I'm going to put the spreadsheets up on the Elmo. And be able to talk about it, but again, bear in mind these are not definitive.
Bob, as you're getting that ready, in this memo here, the 2.6 or 2.59 you're expecting, that represents 1.2 million?
It represents $1 million.
$1 million.
Just over a million, like about $1,052,000.
$15,000.
Scott, what was it?
$1,015,000. 4.67 is what the request represents.
Of 2.59%, what we expect.
Right, that's what the 2.59% is, the calculation is made in terms of what we expect to receive, not what we're asking for. And that represents just over $1 million.
2.59.
So I'll walk you through these scenarios. This, your first spreadsheet there, has a number of different scenarios for different levy calculations that we might make. And then page 2 will have these are all one-year adjustments to the levy. But what would that mean, taking out 13, 14, 15, 16, and beyond? What would be the long-term effect of these individual sort of manipulations to the levy if we were to do something other than just allowing the levy to float to where it would normally be, given the assumptions that we've made?
So problem one is, as you told us, problem one is what year? That's 2010's levy?
That's 2010's levy. That's 2010's aggregate levy was $40,777,676. Okay. Its bond and interest was $2,688,000. Its net operating fund levy, the operating fund levy, was $38,088,000 change. And then the same process was followed all the way down to the various assumptions.
So this 41,831 is the request for the 269.
This is the expectation for this year. Mm-hmm. The following column, the levy request, which I didn't bother to calculate in terms of fund balances because that's something we just don't expect to attain. The next column is to maintain the levy but abate the bond and interest payment this year.
I'm sorry. So the 2011 request, this is, I just want to know if it's like the 259 or the 3.
That would be the 369.
So this is at the 369.
Yeah.
So this will actually, this should be lower. Right.
Which one?
The 2011 levy request is at the 369, not at the 259.
Correct.
The estimated. Request. The estimated is a 259.
Estimated is a 259.
Okay, that's what I'm sure.
Bob, maybe you can point.
Yeah, back here. I was starting to get ahead.
I know, and it took a while to get there.
Okay, so let me just go through what we've done here. I've set up spreadsheets for multiple scenarios. What we have here is a total. What would be? I know the levy for 2010, but what would the levies be? The total aggregate levy be? Bond and interest payments, net operating levy, incremental increase in financing from the base year. The calculation of this number minus this is the incremental additional financing. The assumed surplus. Now, I will tell you that I had to call in PMA to help me with some scenarios this afternoon because I didn't have time to get through everything. So assumed surplus would be, if we were to levy at this amount here, this is what our assumed surplus would be for the year. Mm-hmm. Fund balances, and then the surplus or deficit plus the beginning fund balance would be the end fund balance. Now, I'll go through each of these scenarios now, and then on the other side, it'll be single base year, 2011, in terms of fund balances, and what in each of these scenarios, what implications do they have for the next 5 years out? Again, these are very broad-banded numbers. Mm-hmm. Some of these will have significant, both positive as well as negative effects to the long-term financial health of the district.
So, Bob, sorry, the assumed surplus or deficit is in the budget.
That's what the budget numbers are. Mm-hmm. And again, these aren't, may not be the exact numbers that you've seen before, but it's my desire just to present real broad-framed numbers to you.
And
now,
this is about creating a budget.
Sure. Okay, so 2010 was last year's levy, operating, the aggregate levy, bond and interest, and the net operating fund levy. This year, this is the recommendation that's before you over the next couple of weeks. We estimate the aggregate levy of $48,831,000, This year's bond payments are $2,727,000 for a net operating levy of $39,103,000.
You said 48, it's 41 million.
41, you know?
Yeah, he's just...
41,831 minus the bond and interest gives you a net operating fund of $39,103,000.
Got it.
Okay? This is the levy request. Really, I just laid it out there so you could see it, but it really has of no...
Yeah, this is not the base of the rest of the structure.
Yeah, that's correct, okay? So, I've asked to present a couple of different scenarios, and those I've come up with were four different scenarios, some having a significant impact, though some not having a significant impact. So, if I were to maintain the levy, which would give us about $41,831,000, that would allow the levy, that would allow the EAV, the CPI, new construction, and everything else, that would allow it to do its normal work as provided by PTEL, it would yield about $41.8 million. Then I backed out the bond payment, because the thought payment here is that if the board was looking to reduce fund balances, reduce the levy, we would do it not by fooling with the, or not by sort of manipulating the levy as it's supposed to normally be calculated and allow it to flow, we would specifically take $2.7 million out of the bond and interest fund. And, well, I shouldn't say out of it. What we will do is we will make this payment out of the operating funds instead of specifically out of the bond and interest fund. So what is it? What ramification does that have? That puts us right back to here, that we'll have about $39 million, $39.1 million to account for all of our expenditures. But don't forget now, of that $39 million, which is the same number as the natural extension, we now have to make a $2.7 million payment out of our operating funds.
Right.
I've also asked what would happen if we decided to freeze the rate. This was
the... Oh, sorry, should we keep going down here?
However you'd like me to present it.
I just think we ought to stick with one.
Okay, all right. So then we go back to the estimated 2000 levy extension. I've already run through the net operating funds. What is the incremental increase from year to year given these scenarios? So we would expect to receive $1,015,000 more off of the estimated extension for 2011 and what we did receive in 2010. Mm-hmm. That would yield a surplus of approximately $502,000. If you take the beginning fund balance of approximately $15,364,000 and a surplus, it creates an ending fund balance for at $15,866,000. I did want to caution you that the CPI used in these calculations was set in December of 2010. That CPI is 1.5%. The calculations that we're making for this levy are going to be done in December of 2009. There's a chance, there is the opportunity for reallocation in late March of 2012, mm-hmm. In which we would make some of these reallocations where we were to decide to abate dollars through the bond and interest fund.
Did I? You said 2009. I'm confused.
I probably should have said 2000. The levy, the CPI was set
in
2010.
Then,
okay.
Then we used the CPI to calculate our numbers in December of 2011.
Okay.
And remember, this is for essentially the 2012-13 fiscal school year.
Okay. I got it. Okay.
There's a 2-year lag between the time that the CPI is determined and the budget that it's applied to.
Okay.
So then I'm not going to bother with the levy request because we've already agreed these are numbers that really are meaningless because we don't expect to get them.
Right.
So then I just talked about the bond and interest. This column here would be to maintain the levy and abate the $2.7 million through the bond and interest. And my comments here were that we would have a $39 million overall property tax levy. And of that $39 million, we would still be making $2.7 million in bond payments out of the operating funds. Versus having $41 million available to pay, we would only have $39 million available to pay, a reduction of about $2,700,000. this next fiscal year. So what's the incremental difference between an increase in revenue between operating funds for this year's assumption and the base year of 38 is again the $1,015,000. A major change to these calculations is that you will be paying $2.7 million out of your operating funds, which will create a deficit of in excess of $2.2 million. So what does that do to your fund balances? It reduces your fund balances. These are all consistent across the board, from $15,364,000 to $13,138,000.
So what I think I'm following you, but what I'm not sure is, what are you not doing? Are you not levying for bond and interest?
Well, what we will do is we will maintain our levy as is.
At the 2.69.
And then we will we'll make that payment. We won't levy for bond and interest. When we make the reallocation, when your final levy decisions are made in December of this year, we will make, we'll go out and go across all the funds and trying to not to use certain terminology, but we will what we will do is that when the reallocation sheets come through in March, we will eliminate the levy to the bond and interest fund, thereby reducing the overall rate for this fiscal year.
I guess where you've lost me a little bit is I'm still, my 259 is the same. My levy is the same.
Yes, right.
Column 2 and column 4.
That's correct. Right.
So the levy is the same.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the levy is the same.
But you take the money that would have been generated in your bond and interest,
right,
and you
here.
Pay it out of your ed fund.
So instead of having a total levy of $41,811,000, we would have a total levy of $39,000,000.
But I levy the same. That's where I'm lost.
But you're not, when the levy comes in and what they send you is a worksheet,
mm-hmm.
the bond and interest is in the levy for bond and interest is not, we don't set that, the assessor does. So when we go to allocate all of our dollars, we
so
say to
$1 million comes in.
We say to the assessor, we don't want any levying in our bond and interest. We're going to pay that debt this next year out of our ed fund, our operating funds. So then nothing is allocated in that fund. But we still, because we don't control that fund in terms of the rate, we've still maintained our rate, which has long-term, you know, a better picture for the district long term because we haven't played.
Well, let me ask the question this way: let's say you decided you only wanted to pay $1 million of the two.
You could do that.
That's
you
the question
that.
We asked today. You can levy any amount of between $0 and $2.7 million. So, if we decided to make a $1 million abatement, we could certainly do that. I can present that scenario to you. We could do a $2 million. Or we can do a 2.7 million. Those are all scenarios that I can present.
I just, if all you guys get it, then I'll shut up.
Well, the scenario they're presenting, this is my understanding, is that we're maintaining the levy as presented last, and that we'll vote on December 12th. We're not changing any of that.
No,
it's going
that.
Right, going out to the publications, et cetera. But what the scenario is suggesting, that in deference to some of the concerns and questions about levying when we have surplus and this additional $3 million, which has heightened the conversation, I think, right? To be honest, that this is a way to say to our community that we're saying to the community we're abating these dollars, right, in March. So we say to the assessor, don't want that money. We're taking care of it. Zero it out.
But
we're not playing with my language. Our levy, in terms of the cumulative effect at levying below, can have over the life.
Which has long-term
implications
for future
right.
boards and administrators.
Right.
But I thought an abatement was that we would send money back.
Well, essentially it lowers the tax bill.
it doesn't go back, it just doesn't come in.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Because usually it's a check, it's like a separate check. When you say abatement,
that's
like,
a rebate.
That's a rebate.
Oh,
that's a rebate. Yeah. This is an
abatement.
I looked
at my tax language. I thought about it the same way.
When you get your tax bill, you will see, you know, a levy to various funds, and then you'll see one for bond and interest. That one, when the tax bill has come out in May, would read zero.
Zero. Read zero.
So the amount that you would normally pay to bond payments, like let's say it's $100, and I don't know what that number is in a typical bill, mm-hmm. that number would show zero for this particular year. What would still allow us to levy at, it would still allow the levy to float where it needs to be, given the factors that are used in computing the levy, the CPI, the EAV, new construction, and so mm-hmm. forth.
Yeah. And Dan, I had the same, you know, when we say abatement, and I think that often when we've had community members approach us about abatement, I think that what they really mean to say is rebate. Because my, in my mind, abatement was always, you know, getting my $30 check back. Mm-hmm. And that's really not what abatement means. And maybe, I don't want to speak for you, but that was sort of in my head.
That's what I was always confused.
Okay, so that's what I think the majority, I think most commoners, that's the way we look at it, that's what we're thinking. So perhaps we're not using, we are not we meaning the administration, but we meaning, you know, the common man are using the wrong vocabulary word to describe what's happening.
This is a more efficient way of...
Yeah, this is definitely more efficient because you're not...
Reducing the tax rate.
Right. So in simpleton terms, what this scenario, if I understand you correctly, what this scenario is possibly presenting to us is an opportunity to preserve our tax rate for long-term preservation for future boards and administrations and for our children, as I like to say. And it allows us to utilize a surplus and perhaps slightly lighten the burden of the tax bill on our community.
Yes. And it reduces fund balances over a period of time.
Okay. Yeah, well, it would reduce fund balance
for 1 year.
If you do it every year, it will continue to reduce.
Right.
You'd be agreeing to a deficit budget, which has some of its own implications,
right.
But you'd be agreeing
but
to
that
it.
Was one of my comments, because...
So what's your next file?
But what you're showing us, Bob, and you just said about deficit budget, your scenario, again, if I'm understanding you, is something that we would have an opportunity, or future boards would have an opportunity to look at and make a decision based on a yearly basis.
Yes.
Oh, it's an annual thing.
It's an annual thing.
So it's not an over year, over year.
It's a one-time deal, 2011 levy for the fiscal year 2013. It'll be a one-time deal that wouldn't tie the hands of future boards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'll move on quickly then. This calculation here would actually be to freeze the rates at 2010 levels. So you're going to be freezing your tax rates, experiencing in excess of approximately a 5.8% decrease in EAV. This has significant implications. In other words, it would take over $2 million out of this year's budget alone.
And then future budgets.
You're not freezing really at 2010. You're decreasing from your 2010 aggregate levy.
Well, because of the decreasing EAV, your overall levy will decrease.
Will
also.
Decrease.
Well,
yeah.
I think probably
the tax rate was lower.
Yeah, because I think for this column, I think maybe it would be better is instead of the rate, is maybe freeze the dollars. If that makes sense.
But you can't do that when you do your levy request.
No, but you could calculate what that is. You say, here's a dollar. I guess because this one was really confusing to me.
Well, again, we put this together.
Because you reduced EAV.
Right. So I guess what I would offer, if you wanted to do this column, what my implied intent is.
I guess... If that's what the board wishes for us to do, to do elaborate scenarios beyond what we've done tonight, then we will do so. But we will also have to direct us to. We'll be meeting
at other times, because this is just to give you kind of a snapshot, as opposed to doing a detailed dollar-by-dollar kind of recommendation. What we're trying to say is, here are the outcomes that you will generate if you do not want to align with our recommendation.
Under your maintain the levy and abate, because, I mean, this is a strategy that says we don't hamper future boards, but, you know, let's just say our levy request is $1 million. And if we say we're going to levy that, but we're going to abate $1 million through the bond and interest, right?
Correct.
So that protects your future board concern.
That's correct.
It doesn't change.
And when I look at my tax bill, I'm going to see that one went up and one went down. And the net is there was no increase.
The net should be that you actually would receive a reduction, because you won't have levied in the bond and interest.
Well, I'm talking about the $1 million to $1 million, not exempt, not the $1 million to $2.7 million.
Right.
It would be a wash.
That's what it should be.
Right. It would be fine.
In that scenario.
And I'm just, and we can take any portion of that $2.7 million. Mm-hmm. It might be wise to start slow and look at it this year and make a reduction of, let's say, $1 million to show good faith effort. You know, my recommendations are always going to be to,
To protect the future of the district financially.
I mean, that's my concern with playing with the levy.
But when you abate through the bond and interest fund, it does not, it protects the decision-making ability of future boards.
Nice.
And we can take any amount, whether it's $1 million, $500,000, $1 million, $1.5 million, 2.7, whatever.
And I assume the next two columns are just if our increase wasn't 2.69, it was 1%.
1% and 2%.
Yeah, what does page 2 do for
it? Page 2.
Which is just the effects over time.
Right. But a long-term effect. And again, these were quick calculations.
I mean, so the one that is notable for long-term effects would be the freezing of the rate.
That's disastrous.
Yeah.
This type of decision.
I did, one thing, I guess, I'll retract my freeze rate comment and offer up the fund balance in light of some of our recent discussions. So I did some back-of-the-envelope calculations on these, and all of them are above the 25% level. You know, it'd be interesting to see on the multi-year what that effect is as the years go out.
And we can do that. My word here is one of caution. This is something that we've never done, and if we take this approach, we should take it systematically and slowly. Start at one figure this year, and it gives us all summer and next fall to start early and begin these conversations again. And we come back and maybe we make another adjustment. I don't know, but my word is caution, fiscal conservatism, and just be very careful about what we do so as not to bind decisions of future.
Well,
policy.
And I wouldn't want us to leap necessarily to the outcome if you're over the 25%, that's an automatic abatement to your community, as opposed to...
That's not what the policy says.
Right.
So we have a discussion.
That's a trigger.
And I think that's what Bob is
cautioning
you
against. To start this conversation and prepare these documents.
Right.
So I guess, you know, I go back to sort of where I was last year, where, you know, to me, we're asking for another $1,015,000. And I go back to where I was last year. It seems like this would be a good time to use the reserves to do that, and if that's through not doing the bond and interest, I don't know that I have a problem with that.
Or we do something other than the $2.7 million. We start
that's
a million or something along those lines.
But use that strategy.
$1 million that we're asking for, and take that 2.7 down to 1.6.
You know, Drew and I had a conversation.
I'm sorry, Bob.
Drew and I had a conversation earlier today, and his comment was, well, how much do you expect to receive in new money this year? And I said, you know, about that $1,015,000.
Right, that's last year, that's where I was headed when I started that discussion around the increase and just using the reserves to fund that increase.
if it's necessary to actually fund them.
But you can't, if you do it by freezing your...
No, I'm saying doing it through bonding.
Yeah, yeah. Which, we didn't have that discussion last year. It's also a discussion you don't have to have on December 12th. You can take action on the levy and determine post your action on December 12th what you would actually choose to
because we don't need to decide that until March when the assessor finally gives.
We would want to do it earlier.
I mean, we want it,
yeah.
But
right,
we
but
have.
We don't have to make that decision.
Right.
Right. It would need to go. I believe we talked today to the December 12th board, at least a recommendation, because we usually get that the last week of March. It happens over spring break. And I would need to make those reallocations at that point in time. And I would reallocate at the direction of the board.
Yeah, got it. So we would make sure that you have signed a resolution, approved a resolution by the 1st of March.
Okay. And I would put that procedure in place.
Okay.
In play.
Okay. Again, thinking just, you know, on the top of my head, that might put me, I mean, I think we should make that decision when we vote. Otherwise, we go into, for me, like an unconditional no, as opposed to a. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it's.
Well, you could agree to a yes with the commitment to an abatement.
Yeah, I just want to make sure. And again, to me, that's what I'd like to be voting on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not just voting that, well, we'll talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, because last year at this time, John,
no,
it was on the levy vote that you brought up, should we be using reserves to pay for this. It was on the night of the levy vote, and that was a complicated discussion to have when we needed to vote by law, right? So
it wasn't complicated for me.
Right, but it was complicated for us, the board, because it was new. It was information that was newly presented, you know? So when I spoke with Ann earlier, I asked, do we tonight present and, you know, address some of this with real numbers? And so I want to thank Bob, and he alluded to this earlier, that much of his day was spent providing this for us. And I think what I've at least heard in conversation is that the board is interested in making sure that we don't encumber future boards, and that we at the same time recognize that there's been a deep interest in having this conversation and having some action on it. So to your point, John, for December 12th, it can be with understanding that this resolution will be drafted.
So I guess the final part of this is we would like some direction in terms of what you would want us to abate back in terms of the bond and interest.
But we can do that. I think we need to know tonight whether that's a direction that the board would support,
mm-hmm.
and that that would be the general commitment that we're making with some determination post December 12th, what amount we would abate, and we could do more calculations associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think this is the perfect scenario for us this particular year, and I think it's great that we have the flexibility to go year to year with this type of abatement. I guess is the right
term.
That's
the appropriate term.
You know, given the fact that there is such a large surplus in
from
the budget
this
for this year, and that we as a board have taken the direction of the percentage of the fund balance so that there's some wiggle room there. So I would support this particular option.
Mm-hmm.
So we would just need to land on what that number is going to be. And
we can do that after.
We can do that after.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say tonight, I think the entire amount of bond amendment interest we should go for the entire amount. I'll say that.
The 2.7.
2.7. Yeah, I don't think we need to go like. We have the ability to do that, and the goodwill that would be generated would be probably immense given the proper community relations, which, you know, I know we would be able to do that. You know, some people might not notice that there's a zero number in their tax bill, but if we maybe tell them that, they'll look at it.
Well, they're more likely to notice the zero than they are to notice some percentage of amount.
Either one.
Well, there, you know, should be a communication strategy. They may just think we don't have any bond or interest left.
Right. Yeah, we would need to communicate.
Which, if that happens in 2019 or something.
18, yeah.
Figure
it out. I guess for me to support the levy, I would want to have a minimum abatement is the $1,015,000 as a minimum number. Mm-hmm. You know, and if the board wants to do more than that, no, I'll support that as well. But I mean, and as a minimum number, the $1,015,000, which is essentially, and tell me if I'm wrong, it basically gets to a zero increase from the prior year, mm-hmm. which I think that's, again, sends a strong message, and that'll think we'll build some good goodwill.
Other comments?
I'd agree with the bond of interest thing.
Okay.
I think it's
the full 2 cents.
Okay. Well,
does anybody, I mean, because what we would put forward would be either, it sounds like we have either a 1.015 proposal or a 2.7 proposal. Does that need to be discussed, or, you know, I would need more time to.
Well, Bob said that he could put together some scenarios based on, you know, whether it's a step increase, as you said, start out at 1.15 million, whatever it might be. I mean, I would like to see those numbers and see what the impact is.
Well, that's a pretty big chunk to take out one given fiscal year. Without, you know, my advice is to take this slow. Mm-hmm. And if we decide to, we can do it over multiple years, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I follow the board's direction. Mm-hmm. I just always guide.
Right.
So Bob, I just want to make sure I understand your spreadsheet. The way I read your spreadsheet, if we did the 2.7, I'm still basically carrying, you know, the $14-15 million fund balance that I had now up until 2017.
Mm-hmm. If you did that,
you'd be going down to a 13.
Well, one year it goes down to 13 and then
right.
It goes back to
and 15. Then it starts to slowly build again.
Right. Yeah. Basically by 2017 I'm back to my. And then my bond and interest will die anyway.
Mm-hmm. That dies, but don't forget your expenses. Your operating expenses will increase dramatically, given that, you know, average salary growth is 4% a year.
Yeah. I'm just saying that's the way I'm interpreting this.
Right.
That's a fair interpretation.
But those increases are not factored into those fund balances
right.
growing.
So this is not modeled to then say my expenses went up.
No.
So then this number comes
high level.
I didn't have time to put that type of information in.
Steve, we haven't heard from you. Any comments? I know you don't have these numbers in front of you. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, I don't have anything. Apparently, I didn't know this is what we were talking about.
Well, based on several conversations today, there, you know, I spoke with Ann earlier today and asked if we could, and they had already thought about this anyway, but present something to the board in terms of answering what I think is really the question about the levy, which is wanting to show some faith toward reducing tax burden. So that's why we ended up here.
Bob can send you the spreadsheet first thing in the morning, Steve.
Yeah, can we email it to you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, I think we have at least sentiment of the board, and we can move forward with that. We appreciate the discussion, and we'll bring back the final recommendation, which will be to have the levy request as is with some recommendation for abatement.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you so much for that. I know you pretty much spent your whole day working on this.
All of the day's work. Thank you, Bob. All right. Upcoming meetings of the board include December 12, 2011. Public hearing on the 2011 levy is at 7:15 p.m. here at Central Services. December 12, 2011 regular board meeting, 7:20 or immediately following the public hearing at Central Services office. January 9, 2012, a regular board meeting, 7:30 at Ben Franklin. Any other matters to be just considered by the board? I just want to point out that Ann sent out an invitation today for January 18th, special meeting beginning at 5:30, I think it was, 5:30 or 6, I can't remember, but please check your calendars and
what was it for?
January 18th
for a special meeting to discuss negotiating.
Right. Right. So, and then as a, thank you, and as a piece of that, we still have a request out for people to respond to the information about superintendent characteristics, so please work on that and get that to Ann. Public participation. Any other members of the public who wish to address the board at this time? Seeing none. The board has determined it has a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the following matters. The appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district, determines validity. B, the purchase or lease of real property for the use of the district, including meetings held for the purpose of discussing whether a particular parcel should be acquired. The board will possibly be taking action on employment matters when it returns to open session. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Motion. Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Kegley.
Yes.
Mr. Bondrack.
Yes.
Yes.
He said yes.
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 Yes. Thank you very much. Return to open session on November 28th at 11:30 p.m. May I have a motion to approve the administration to approve the retirement proposal as presented? Steve had a second?
Steve had a second, okay.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please, Tara.
Mr. Smith?
No.
Okay, give me a second here. Sorry, guys. Black?
No.
Ellis?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Doesn't matter. Howard? Yes.
Vondra?
Seaver?
Yes.
And
no.
I know, John. Kenwood. No. I'm sorry, Kenwood.
No.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. May I have a motion to adjourn the November 28th, 2011 regular board meeting?
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.